Go Justice Radio SoCal 350 and Adventures in Waste. If you like what you heard and you want others to be informed, then subscribe and share the episodes. You have been listening to Eco Justice Radio, a project of SoCal 350 and Adventures in Waste. Executive producer Jack Eit, producer and co-host Jessica Aldridge, co-host Carrie Kim, and engineer and original music by Blakequake Beats. And until next time, remember, the power is yours.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. KBOO's Community Advisory Board will meet on Monday, December 9th at 6 p.m. The meeting will be held at 20 South East 8th Avenue in Portland and online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
You're listening to KBOO's Catalog of Connections year-end campaign, where we bring you a range of community-oriented programming built by community members like you. Help KBOO reach our $75,000 goal by December 31st, so we can bring you another great year of cutting-edge radio made by you, for you. Just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321 to contribute today.
Hi, you're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM Portland, and this is Life Stamps, stories from here and there. I'm Joseph.
I am Tyson.
Join us every other Thursday at 10 a.m. as we discuss exciting destinations around the world. They're not always from personal experience, but never without cultural awareness and a passion for travel. Life Stamps, stories from here and there. This is your host, Joseph, with my co-host.
It's me, Tyson. How's everyone doing today?
Hey, Tyson. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. It's holiday season. It's, you know, that's always my favorite time of year.
It is, yeah. And speaking of celebrations, lots of cultures around the world have different celebrations that aren't necessarily, you know, the same that we celebrate here in the U.S. Is there any on your mind right now that you can think of?
Well, you know, it's funny because I was trying to pick my brain. And I was like, you know, what would be an interesting thing to talk about that's like winter related holiday wise, since we are in the holidays, without kind of feeling like I'm like, you know, kind of appropriating it a little bit. So I wanted to choose something a little safe in that regard, because I was like, well, I could talk about Hanukkah, but I actually don't know a ton about Hanukkah. I don't want to like give poor information. And then I was also thinking Kwanzaa, you know, which is also a pretty fascinating, I think, 5-day holiday or 6-day holiday or something like this. But likewise, I didn't feel best speaking on the matter because we don't celebrate Kwanzaa in my house, obviously. I mean, we just celebrate Christmas. I was raised Lutheran. So then I started like reading up about the Diwali festivals in India, which are not actually happening this time in the year in December, but they're actually autumn festivals.
Okay.
But I found it kind of similar because of the things that they do with lights, and then there's a bit of gift exchange, and then there's food prepared and stuff. So there are certain things that are like that are done and practiced during Diwali that are kind of similar to Christmas practice, which I found to be pretty interesting. So this is kind of where my research leads our show today.
I see.
Yeah.
All right. Well, yeah, that's interesting. So, I guess like to just start out, how long is the festival? Is this like a multi-day festival or is it just one day?
It's a 5-day long festival in autumn between October and November. It's different days each year because it kind of likes to revolve around the lunar lunar cycles. So it's more likely when the first new moon happens in late October, potentially if it's different that year and it's like early November, then maybe Diwali would go from like November 1st to November 5th. I think this year Diwali went from October 30th to November 3rd or November 4th.
Okay.
But there's 5 days within the whole Diwali festival each year.
Okay, so this year, so it's different every year.
It's different every year.
Is it like a lunar calendar that it goes off of?
It's the lunar calendar. Okay. And I think, I don't know if this is accurate, but I theorize it's probably because when it's the new moon, you're just going to be able to enjoy all the lights that are put up everywhere better because you don't have light pollution from a full moon.
Oh, I see. So yeah. It's better to do it when it's a new moon. I see. So
right.
The lights and stuff.
Right. And this is also tied into like, you know, equinoxes and stuff like this as well in harvest season.
So is this a celebration that's like all over India, or where is it celebrated in specific states, or
to my knowledge, it's in lots of places in India. That's a really good question. Oh, okay. So the main sects within India, I think, that do practice Diwali are Hindus, Jainism, and Sikhism.
Okay.
So, but I know there are other subsects of different, you know, religious groups and different ethnic communities within India. It's probably the melting pot of Asia, if you really think about it, in terms of like all the different diversity of people that are within India.
I see. So it's more about like religious reasons, not so much like geographical. In terms of like who celebrates it,
I think so. Yeah. So it's an interesting because it's so there's theories about where it comes from, the holiday and stuff. And the most common definition is they say it's likely a combination of different harvest festivals within the Indian subcontinent, honoring famous legends and stories.
I see.
And stuff like that. I think Harvey is poking at me. Maybe he's got a little bit of something to say here about Diwali. Do you?
Oh, so a little bit of history, maybe?
Yeah, maybe.
Okay, well,
what's going on, Harvey?
Let's see.
Once upon a time, in a small village in India, there lived a kind and gentle king named
Rama.
I've
heard of this, Harvey.
He ruled his kingdom with wisdom and justice, loved by his people. But Rama's life took a dramatic turn when his stepmother, Queen Kaikeyi, forced him into exile. Rama, accompanied by his loyal wife, Sita, and brother Lakshmana, wandered into the forest for 14 long years. During their exile, Sita was abducted by the powerful demon king Ravana. Rama and Lakshmana searched far and wide, aided by Hanuman, the monkey god, and his army. After a fierce battle, Rama defeated Ravana and rescued Sita. The people of Ayodhya, Rama's kingdom, were overjoyed at his return. To celebrate Rama's victory and homecoming, the people of Ayodhya lit Diyas earthen lamps and decorated their homes with flowers and Rangoli colorful designs. This marked the beginning of Diwali, the festival of lights. To this day, Hindus around the world celebrate Diwali by lighting diyas, candles, and fireworks, symbolizing the triumph of light over darkness and good over evil. Families gather, share sweets, and worship the goddess Lakshmi, seeking prosperity and happiness. Diwali is not just a celebration of Rama's victory, but also a time for self-reflection. It reminds us to conquer our inner demons, just like Rama conquered Ravana, and to seek the light within ourselves.
Okay, well, thank you, Harvey, for talking about that. Was one legend that is tied to, you know, the history of Diwali. And, you know, so that legend is the return of Prince Rama, you know, who had been exiled for 14 years and then had his wife abducted by the Demon King.
I see. So that's it. So it's a like many festivals, it has a mythological sort of origin story.
But this is not the main one.
Oh, so there's multiple
ones. So that's why I said it's likely a combination of different harvest festivals within the Indian subcontinent from different legends and stories. So different regions of India have a different legend behind Diwali. But,
I see.
But their celebration practices are pretty similar. They're different in different cities a little bit, but the main themes of like lighting the world up and doing the Festival of Lights is still the same in different Indian cities.
I see.
However, the legend behind that practice of that celebration is a different legend.
Okay.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah. So it's sort of like one festival, but it's celebrating lots of different things, like depending on where you are.
Well, the concept is the same, right? So the main concept is light over darkness.
Right.
You know, is the main theme. And that is within Hinduism, Jainism, or Sikhism. Is because Diwali literally translates to row of lights, I think, in Sanskrit or something like this. So the idea that you're bringing light from the darkness, not just from an ancient legend, but as a personal thing in Hindu faith, is just within your own personal journey to eventually try to attain nirvana, you know, as Hindus believe or whatever, is a common theme that will be practiced in Diwali, all different parts of India. Now, the original backstory of why we do this is different.
I see.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, like, and then Harvey was talking about the return of Prince Rama. It literally was Prince Rama defeating the Demon King after living in exile for 14 years. And it was accompanied with his wife Sita and brother Lakshman. And then it was believed after he defeated the Demon King, the village of Ayodhya, India, lit lamps to welcome their return after 14 years of exile and basically cleansing the village of darkness from the evil Demon King.
I see.
And that's one legend.
Okay.
Another legend talks about the defeat of Narakasura. And this is where Lord Krishna, like similarly, defeated a demon called Narakasura and freed the kingdom from its evil. And then after that defeat, Diwali, it was born because evil had been cleansed from the region. And why not make this day the new holy day of Diwali?
I see. So everything is really just centered around good over evil, and like the triumph of good over evil, or light over dark.
Right. And it's not collective specifically. It can be individual as well. It's how you fight your own inner demons or how you protect others and then fight the demons that they are fighting themselves.
I see.
So it's kind of like trying to achieve collective enlightenment, collective, I don't know.
Yeah.
Goodness.
I understand. It's like it's sort of just like a festival to like lift everyone up a little bit, you know,
right?
Spiritually.
Yeah. And then one last legend here is Lord Mahavira's attainment of Nirvana. And in this story, Diwali is literally the day when Lord Mahavira had attained complete knowledge and enlightenment. So Lord Mahavira finally went through all the pillars and all the stages to reach Nirvana and complete enlightenment. And so then Diwali celebrates that in this case for that legend.
I see. I see.
So some of it's about a battle. Some of it's about your personal journey, but it can be individual or it could be collective. But either way, it's kind of like to bring yourself up, to bring others up around you.
It seems like it would be very specific, like when you celebrate it, very specific to what you're going through in that moment. Like if you're working to like uplift the community, or if you're like working on yourself, you know, to like for your own like spiritual journey or something.
Right. I mean, it's
collective and personal.
If you're driving in crazy Delhi traffic, you know, and people are cutting you off and blah, 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 and everybody's yelling and shouting, flipping you the finger or whatever, you know, you just could be like, Diwali's almost here. I have love to give. I don't have to, you know, give in to my inner demons and take part in this road rage.
I see. Yeah.
I mean, that's one way of looking at it. That's
one way to put it, for sure.
Yeah.
So, before we go on, just want to say, if you're just tuning in, this is KBOO 90.7 FM Portland. You're listening to Life Stamp, Stories from Here and There. And today we're talking about the Indian Festival of Diwali, just to go in line with just the holiday season, spirit of the holidays, and just talking about... more internationally, you know, what festivals are celebrated around the world. So today we're focusing on Diwali. And so we just covered the origin, sort of the origin myth of Diwali, why you celebrate it, and the different stories that people tell.
Myths.
Different myths.
Myths, yep. Plural.
Yeah, right, because there's multiple ones, and some of them are about a battle, some of them are about your personal development, but it's all about good over evil, light over dark, and being calm when driving in crazy traffic.
Right, yeah.
So, I'm just curious, like, could you walk me through, if you were to celebrate, you know, like, you said it's like a 5-day festival, what does that look like, you know, day one, what do you do, like how is it celebrated, just like take me on this journey.
Well, I don't know what's necessarily happens from like day one to day two to day three to day four type of thing, you know. I mean, I know like we sort of like we have Christmas Eve and Christmas, so it's like very traditional that everything, all your decorations are up by Christmas Eve to welcome Santa Claus to coming down the chimney or whatever. To put that in context. So I don't know where these all fall within the 5-day period of the festival, but here are common practices that do happen within Diwali.
Okay.
And then Harvey had also mentioned that everybody honors Lakshmi, and she's just a goddess of blessings, essentially.
Okay.
So Lakshmi Puja, and I think Puja is like a Sanskrit word probably for honor.
Okay.
Or festival or something like this.
Yeah.
But anyways, the Lakshmi Puja is the worship service where families will place their oil lamps, candles, and electric lights around their houses to welcome Goddess Lakshmi and receive her blessings.
Okay.
So I sort of see that as similarly, you know, like everybody's gets their house together with all the lights and everything, probably marking the first day of Diwali to receive the blessings of Lakshmi.
Okay.
And so that's probably, I've never participated in Diwali, but my guess within Indian neighborhoods is once everybody kind of gets their houses together and everything, that a lot of people will probably meditate around their homes and everything and try to join this collective consciousness, you know, welcoming Lakshmi. and then just, you know, admiring other people's gift to her that they had done with their own decorations in their own homes.
I see.
And stuff, you know, so it's kind of like marking like a really grandiose walkway for a mythical goddess.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's that, like the decorating the house and the lights and everything.
Right.
Okay. And so then what's another thing that you do during the festival?
Similar to how we do wreaths on our door, they have what's called rangoli.
Mm-hmm.
And rangoli are kind of like really, really like elaborate, bright colored, like kind of motifs or mosaics, sometimes in flower patterns and stuff, you know. Sometimes they can even be made with flowers.
Okay.
But it's basically maybe in the front of your house, you'll do this giant rangoli, or maybe in the main living room of your home, you'll create a giant rangoli.
I see.
And that's, like I said, it's going to be this like really elaborate kind of mosaic motif and stuff.
What is it made out of?
Well, that's what I said. I think in some cases it can be tile work. I think in some cases it can be an arrangement of flowers. I think in some cases people buy them from stores. And so it's kind of put together like Legos and then just set, but it's meant to be walked on.
It's meant to be walked on.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you just put it on the floor.
Yeah. It's kind of like a grand seal that you would see inside of a castle or a cathedral.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And, you know, I mean, I know there are superstitions in some cultures where you don't walk on those things because, but I think you're supposed to walk on them because I think they're supposed to be considered holy and that you receive good blessings also by walking on the rangoli.
Oh, okay.
Now, don't quote me on that, but I don't think that they're considered sacred. Maybe not with your shoes, but I think you can walk on them barefoot.
I see. Right. Okay.
I think.
So the rangoli, the decorating of the house, I think I'm getting like a nice mental image of what this might look like. Anything else?
So then there is the fourth day of Diwali.
Uh-huh.
My true love came to me.
Uh-huh.
Just kidding. That is...
Partridge and a pear. Okay.
Right.
Yeah, go ahead.
That is called the Govardhan Puja.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where Krishna is honored and celebrated for the victory over Lord Indra.
Mm.
You know, once again, tying back to probably one of those glorious battles of light over darkness. Mm-hmm. So what, featuring Lord Krishna in this case. So that is, and I don't think that's celebrated in every Indian city. I think that's more probably tied to the places where people worship Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's foods, like Harvey had also mentioned, it's a lot of sweets. It seems like people really, really like to sugar themselves up during Diwali, you know, just eat all these different types of Indian desserts and things of that nature, enjoy the lights and spend time with family and
what do you have like
themselves
any
blessed
specific examples of like the food that might be eaten or the desserts?
Well, I want to talk about that later.
Okay.
But yeah, I do. I can.
You have a whole list of them.
I have a whole list of common Diwali, you know, foods to share and enjoy good people's company and everything and stuff like that. You know, a lot of them go well with like a nice spiced Indian chai. And then there is a gift exchange similar to Christmas, meant to strengthen bonds and love within families. So it's just like we, you know, it's a reminder that, you know, I'm alive, you're alive, we're family. Here's a gift to you, and here's a gift in return, and you know, just to strengthen the family bonds, you know, is the gift giving and stuff.
Okay.
I think they're concepts of merchandise that are a little different than what we have here in the Western world. They're probably not littering each other with electronics, would be my guess.
you never know.
Yeah, I never know. I mean, maybe an iPhone is a good gift for Diwali, but something tells me you're going to want to make the gift a little more spiritual.
I see.
But
so it's more of like symbolic gifts, not like material stuff.
I think so.
Not like what, you know, what I want for Christmas. That kind of thing.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. So my interpretation would probably be like, you know, socks, sweaters, you know, trinkets, just things that have more sentimental value in terms of keepsakes.
Yeah. Okay.
And stuff in gift exchange. That we were talking about, there's the fireworks aspect of it too, and firecrackers are actually lit on the paths of where they make, like, you know, like light pathways on streets and within Indian neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean light pathways? Like, they do they like set up lights on the path on the
There's going to be candles, there's going to be oil lamps, there's going to be electric lights and stuff, different people's houses and stuff. And if it's on a main road, it should be similar to like a Christmas street.
Okay,
I see. Where the whole street is kind of like a lit pathway or whatever.
I see.
And the difference is what they like to do is periodically run out to the street and just throw firecrackers or, you know, different fireworks and blast them off in those streets, because it is believed that they're creating a path for the ancestors to return back to heaven.
I see.
So, okay. Like, the ancestors come there, the famous people from the legends will come there, give them their blessings, wish them all a happy journey on their pathway onto nirvana, and then, you know, kind of move on. But, you know, then so the mortals are blasting fireworks to just kind of be like, okay, here's the light on the earth. Now there's the light up in the sky. You will follow that light and go back to heaven.
I see.
I think.
Yeah. This is very theological.
The gist that I'm getting is talking
like
about,
everything's very symbolic. Like, everything sort of like has some kind of symbology surrounding it, you know, like why, you know, like lighting up the pathways, like what does that mean? And then, like, you know, decorating the house and doing like the Rangoli, I think is what you said.
Right.
Yeah, like everything has a sort of like symbolic meaning to it, is kind of what I'm getting.
Right. And like, I mean, old Christmas traditions, you know, have these as well. You know, we don't know it so much. It's a lot more of a consumer holiday in this modern day day and age, and, you know, especially, you know, Western culture like we are here today. But if you look at all the old Christmas stories, you know, it all does come back from old legends,
right?
You know, Saint Nick and, you know, all the stuff that we know, you know, or at least your parents knew.
No, totally. I mean, I think that's like the there are some parallels in that sense of like lights and, you know, and also it's like, it's like a mix too of like the pagan festival that Christmas sort of took over, and, you know, like with like the tree and stuff like that.
That's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about all the old legends that are tied to, you know, Christmas or whatever the old name was, which I'm not remembering right now. For what Christmas?
Well, there might have been different names, like depending on, you know, which
cult,
you know, because I think it was like a something that was like sort of widely celebrated, but different, like
Yuletide. And stuff. Yuletide is the word.
The Yule log, burning of the Yule log and stuff.
Yeah, right. So all that stuff is very similar, I think, to Diwali, except for it's just a little bit later, where it's more of a winter festival for us. This is like, you know, like a late autumn festival,
right?
Within India,
right,
and stuff.
So back to Diwali.
You know, I'm like trying to remember now, but there's different cities that do different things. Let me try to remember.
Hey, it's Harvey here. Now let's take a quick break before we move on to the next topic.
If you're just tuning in, this is Life Stamps, Stories from Here and There. And if you've been enjoying the show so far, you can show your support by helping KBOO out with our annual Catalog of Connections year-end campaign by contributing toward our $75,000 goal.
And if you like what you hear, consider becoming a member today at kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321 today. Thank you very much.
All right, back to the show.
Yeah, so I was moving on to, like, you know, different cities in India where you can do Diwali and, like, what makes them unique and stuff. So.
Yeah, Tyson, you kind of lost your train of thought there for a second.
I was looking for Nirvana, dude.
Had to have Harvey come in and save us.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes when you go through a really deep spiritual awakening like that, you know, it just overtakes you. I'm sorry.
Oh, so where'd you go?
It's personal. I it's in my journal.
Oh, I see. Well,
that's for another episode. Tyson's
tune in next time for Tyson's journal readings.
Tyson's journal readings.
A spiritual journey with Tyson.
Yeah, yeah, but not today. Because it's personal. Anyways, but if we were going to celebrate Diwali and try to find our own personal enlightenment, or, you know, you're celebrating. Mm-hmm.
When are we going to get to the food?
Well, I want to say that's interesting because I just had a thought and I remember reading about this, you know, and I think there's a couple stipulations with Diwali.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you eat meat.
Okay.
During Diwali. Mm-hmm. And I don't think you consume alcohol during Diwali.
Okay.
Now, I don't know.
This is sort of like keeping clean.
Keeping clean, mm-hmm. I guess. Yeah, mm-hmm. is a good way to put it and okay. stuff. But let's start in the city of Varanasi.
Okay.
What
part of India is that in?
Can't tell you, but the Ganges River flows through the city.
Okay.
If that helps.
Uh-huh.
But this is one of the best places to visit because they line the whole riverbanks with the diyas and the oil lamps and the candles and stuff along the Ganges River. I think they're also floating like various like deities through the Ganges River when you're in Varanasi during Diwali.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very magical setting, you know, upon dusk. Once it starts getting dark and everything.
I see.
And there's like probably should be like river processions and then just holy candles and
mm-hmm.
really cool things to see there along the Ganges, you know, just a pretty amazing experience.
Right. Cause it's like directly on the river and everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Varanasi is very, very special for that. If you go to Jaipur,
mm-hmm.
which is known as the Pink City, I'm thinking it's the Pink City because there's a lot of pink carnations
mm-hmm.
or pink houses or something.
I see.
Within Jaipur. So that already is like makes it a very beautiful place to visit any time of the year.
Mm-hmm.
They apparently do a grand regal experience with a lot of festive decorations and cultural displays around mm-hmm. Diwali and stuff, you know. So I imagine this is just different. Constructions of gods and goddesses and stuff and like very important like, you know, royal buildings within Jaipur
mm-hmm.
during this. Ayodhya, where the famous Rama story comes from, is very spiritual place during Diwali because obviously this is the most famous legend with tied to Diwali. And so it's spiritually important because of the legend of Prince Rama.
I see.
With the city of Ayodhya.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you move on to Gujarat, this is the place that loves the fireworks, apparently. This is a very energetic Diwali festival is happening here with like just tons of fireworks, bustling markets, and massive Rangoli patterns are put out in like city squares and streets and everything.
So the just that I'm getting is that every city might have a slightly different way of celebrating. Like it might some one city might be more like it's more about like the decorations or you know like the might be but like more calm and another like the one that you were just mentioning is more energetic and like
yeah Gujarat's supposed to just be like total pandemonium.
It's not like
Diwali.
Every city does like fireworks or is like really crazy about celebrating and stuff.
Right. Some mm-hmm. cities, it's a lot more kind of just spiritual mm-hmm. and, you know, spending time with family and just appreciating, you know, just the lights and everything that people have done. Other places, yeah, there's music and markets
so
and
I'm
fireworks.
Curious because we have some Diwali celebrations here in the U.S. where, you know, I've just seen images. I haven't actually been to one, but it's all very like you have like the colorful powder and paint and stuff that like you know goes like people like dance around and
I think
and, like,
you're talking about the Holi festival.
Oh, Holi, sorry,
we're not talking about Diwali.
Sorry, I got that mixed up. Okay, wow, I feel stupid.
That's but similarly that is a seasonal holiday and I think that's to honor spring.
I see.
Springtime.
Okay never and, mind yeah. I'm just gonna shut up.
Yeah.
Ha ha ha, that's one of the most ridiculous things my circuits have ever heard.
All right, thanks, Harvey.
Well, Harvey knows that Joseph doesn't know anything, but
just gonna laugh at me, I guess.
I'll forgive.
Kick me while I'm down.
I'll forgive Joseph. I'm a little less rigid than robots, so I'll forgive you this time, Joseph.
Thanks, Tyson. Appreciate
even if Harvey
you.
Will not.
Uh-huh.
And then yeah, then there's Kolkata.
Okay.
The city of Kolkata.
Mm-hmm.
Here they celebrate not just Diwali but also a festival called Kali Puja.
Mm-hmm.
So it's technically two festivals within one city during
around
the same time.
Okay.
I don't know what goes on with Kali Puja as well,
mm-hmm,
when you're in Kolkata, mm-hmm, but it's kind of like, I think if one was to go there, you know, and perform and take part in the practices, you could, you know, check out Diwali for a day or two and then, you know, then do the other, like, city-specific festival for, mm-hmm, the next day or two. So that's kind of interesting.
Yeah,
if you really needed all your holidays.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that makes sense.
But I think it's important for people that celebrate both, mm-hmm, within India as well to, mm-hmm, be in Kolkata.
Right.
And then there's Amritsar,
mm-hmm,
which is they do elaborate Diva celebrations honoring Bandi Chahor.
Mm-hmm.
I think I pronounced this correct. Bandi Chahor. Happens here during Diwali. So I think here they just have a lot of like important goddesses that are tied in with Diwali.
Mm-hmm.
So in Amritsar, you kind of just get a lot of holy blessings.
I see. So some of these places have other festivals that are happening concurrently.
The only one I read that stated that actually is Kolkata.
Oh, I see.
In Kolkata, they also do Kali Puja,
which
I'm sure honors Kali.
Mm-hmm.
As well as Diwali at the same time.
Mm.
But I don't know what honorings for Kali entail.
I see.
I think Kali's like the ornament woman with eight arms.
Mm.
Am I right?
I don't know. Let's see.
I think so. But anyways, and I'm not sure what she's the goddess of, but I think that's who Kali is.
Kali represents the opposing forces of destruction and creation.
Okay.
As well as death, time, death, and rebirth. So sort of this, like, dueling ideas of, like, destruction and creation.
Interesting. Regenerations.
It kind of, like, makes me think about times in your life where it's, like, something is, like, something goes away or something's destroyed, but then something new comes from that.
Right. Well, and Diwali happens in autumn, so, mm-hmm, that's very, you know, tied in with like rebirth energy and stuff. You
right.
Know? Mm-hmm. So I could see that. That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Yeah.
If you are there, do you have more cities that you want to talk
no,
about?
No, that's all I've got.
If you're gonna go to India to celebrate, you know, to experience the Diwali celebration, where, like, which city would you want to visit?
Oh, definitely. What was the first one I mentioned? Varanasi. I would love to see that site along the Ganges.
That one spoke to me more too. Yeah, I was like, I was just looking at some pictures of the city, and it looks really cool. It's like right on the river, like all the city kind of goes up against the river, and I was like, that would be really pretty with, like, you know, all the decorations and
right.
and stuff. And it doesn't sound like too. Maybe if I was younger, I'd want to do something that's more like crazy and,
with the fireworks,
you know,
and stuff,
party atmosphere and stuff.
Well,
yeah.
I don't, but that's what I'm trying to say, because I still don't think it's like considered like you booze it up during
right,
Diwali.
Not that kind of party, but like, you know, yeah, like more just like
dancing,
upbeat celebration and
yeah,
stuff,
and the fireworks and stuff.
Yeah,
I mean, that's always fun too, you know, mm-hmm, even as an observer, just to see other people's
yeah.
energy and how much how vibrant they become because
right.
of certain holidays, and because they're really known for like the market culture and the food hawker stalls and stuff within Gujarat.
Mm-hmm.
That I could see like spending some time there too, but I think for my personal self-reflection side mm-hmm. of it, as like the way one would honor this holiday on a personal level,
mm-hmm.
I would definitely want to go to Varanasi
mm-hmm.
and hang along the Ganges.
I see. Yeah,
you know, just that whole holy site of the lights and stuff sounds incredible.
yeah, for sure. Yeah, so moving on,
So talking about food,
yeah,
you know what families will do.
I wasn't sure if I should ask that question again, you know.
No, yeah, because I was talking about markets and the food stalls and stuff. So whether you're walking around and there's just people selling snacks, people sell a lot of this stuff any time of the year, but more common than not, there's just a lot more of this during Diwali, and then at people's houses if they make it. So there's a ton of desserts. There's only a couple savory things.
Okay.
But I'll start with one of the first things you'll probably commonly see is called gulab jamun.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I know that. I've heard of that before.
Yeah, it's kind of like
a syrupy kind of thing.
It's kind of like a little donut hole that swims in simple syrup or whatever. But it's not made with wheat flour like we know as like a traditional American donut. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's like a rice flour. Creation.
But the idea is kind of similar. It's a deep fried ball of dough.
It's a deep fried ball of dough that's just kind of
like smothered in syrup.
Yeah, in sugar syrup. And then usually within that dough, there should be like some cinnamon and some cardamom. So you get like a nice spice profile that goes along with the crunch.
I see.
And then, of course, you got samosas. And these are literally just like fried little like hand pie pockets that can be filled with anything. Quite often they're filled with like curry peas, curried carrots, curried potatoes, curry spinach. More often than not, they're always vegetarian in most parts. Just different types of mushy kind of curry vegetables are usually filled within these samosa hand pies. Then we've got gajar ka halwa, which is like a sweet carrot custard. So they sweeten the carrots, you know, probably with like a type of tamarindo and some sugar, and they make a custard out of carrots.
Okay. Sweet custard made from carrots. That's interesting.
Right.
Because I could see that being something that could be good, but it's not something that, like, I always think of carrots as a savory thing, except for maybe carrot cake.
Right. So if you imagine carrot cake, but, you know, just taking that concept and then turning it into a custard. You know, so
yeah. No, that's interesting. Okay. Yeah.
And then, you know, so that was gajar ka halwa. If you just say halwa, you're just talking about any type of pudding or custard. So they'll do various other fruits and vegetables will make their way into the custard world and stuff during this time of year. And people sell those, like I said, on the streets, or, you know, people will make them at houses to have with friends. Barfi is like an Indian fudge with cinnamon and nuts. I don't think it's actually chocolate, though.
Okay.
Like fudge. I think it's, what's that kind of like chocolate herb? Carob.
Like carob? Okay.
Yeah, I think it's like a carob fudge.
Interesting. Okay.
You know, spiced with cardamom and nuts and stuff like that.
Have you had carob?
Yeah. Yeah. It's decent. I mean, you got to choose like the better applications. I like it in cookies myself personally, because it's got a little more of a crunch than like chocolate does. So carob's good in certain aspects like that.
Yeah.
And stuff. Then this is just like all around the world. There's like a different type of rice pudding. You know, obviously India's got their own different variations, and their
that's interesting.
Their rice pudding, they just call kheer or kahir. And so there'll be different rice puddings available to sample and try. Then there's coconut laddu, which are like these sweet coconut balls.
Okay.
I think it's literally like a three-ingredient recipe. Like, I literally think it's like milk, sugar, and coconut. But the coconut absorbs all that sweetened milk. And then you just form these like little balls. And then in some cases you can fry them or deep fry them. Or bake them.
Is it like shredded coconut?
Yeah.
Okay, so you have like shredded coconut, you form into a ball, and like it soaks up all of the
sweetened milk.
Okay. And then you fry it.
You fry it, bake it, or, you know, deep fry it.
Yeah.
Like you could fry it on a skillet too, I think, over fire or something like
this. I see.
Whatever way you want to like kind of crisp it up. So, and caramelize that sweetened milk. So that's coconut laddu. You probably noticed a theme here.
Yeah.
It's all sweet. Just about.
Except for the,
the samosas.
The samosas, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then, so I got one other, I think, savory one, and that's called aloo tikki.
Alutiki?
Alutiki.
Okay.
And these are basically like potato croquettes.
Mm.
So I imagine they're doing some kind of boiled mashed potato, maybe mm-hmm. with some spices. And
they bread it and fry it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So
is it influence? Is it like something that like is specifically from India, or is that like...
You know, it does sound a lot like the Brits had their hand on this, right? Because
I'm just wondering, I'm just curious, because that kind of like a croquette, like I feel like that kind of that concept, like of a right. thing, like is you can find in various parts around the world,
right?
Maybe because of British colonialism or something. I don't know.
Sure.
Yeah, because I've seen it in other places as well.
Right.
Like, oh, that's interesting that this is a thing here.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, that could be a little bit of, you know, British imperialism, you know, leaving behind some things of their own culture, you know.
What are those ones called again?
Alutiki.
Alutiki?
Yeah.
Okay. Is it T-I-K-I? T-I-K-K-I, I see.
Oh, you found it.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, you can take a look and see the pictures on that and stuff. Which we all know from like various Indian restaurants here, a nice refreshing drink is a mango lassi,
mm-hmm.
you know, which is essentially like a mango yogurt smoothie
mm-hmm.
and stuff. And then there's also different lassis with different fruits and stuff, you know, indigenous to different parts of India and stuff that become lassis
mm-hmm.
and stuff. But I feel like the mango is like the most common one that most people know. So that's something to drink if you're not having, you know, chai tea
mm-hmm.
or something to go along with all these sweet snacks.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's also paneer tikka.
Mm-hmm.
And this one's pretty cool. So this is literally like grillable cheese put on a skewer and then cooked over fire.
Oh, okay.
So it's like a little cheese stick.
Yeah, that sounds good.
What makes it unique, because there's other places in the world that also do like grillable cheese on
for
skewers
sure.
or whatever
mm-hmm.
but you can imagine within in India it's heavily curry spiced paneer
mm-hmm.
Cheese, you know, then put
see.
On a skewer, then kind of cooked over the fire
mm-hmm.
and then finally I'm my last dessert for you is called gujia
mm-hmm.
and that is a sweet deep fried dumpling, kind of like a sweet empanada.
Mm.
Except for, I think, with chickpea flour or rice flour makes the actual pie crust. And then
mm-hmm.
the fillings are always just going to be kind of like sweet cheese and fruit
mm.
and stuff, you know, as like a little chickpea hand pie.
Yeah, that's interesting. So I just want to issue a correction, though, for the tiki, the alu tiki. It actually did originate in India.
And, oh, it did.
It doesn't look anything like a... I mean, it's kind of like a sort of like a croquette, but it doesn't look like a croquette.
Oh, interesting.
It kind of looks like more of like a little round, flat dumpling.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's... But the interesting thing also, speaking of the UK, is that you can get vegetable tiki from delis. Like deli counters at different shops.
Oh, well, they have a huge, like Punjab population specifically, and Indian subsect population within London specifically, I know. But I think a lot of the UK is like...
But they've also just taken like, you know, certain like curries you can find all over the UK. Like it's just like a food that you can, that's just become common in the UK.
Right. So, it's just like, it's like as common as like our Mexican food is
yeah.
within the United States.
Right.
It's
right.
just everywhere apparently, but
yeah.
some of the best in the world, they say, because of the demographics.
Totally. Yeah. So that's interesting. All of those foods. So are there certain foods like you just like snack on them throughout, or is it like, you have them on certain days, or is there a fee, you know, because these all sound like very snackable foods, you know, like little
right,
you know, like little bites or little, like, you know, it's not like a whole meal, right? It's
well,
like
I
little desserts.
I go back to Christmas with this, you know, because
mm-hmm.
we have gingerbread houses, everybody makes cookies, sometimes Christmas brownies show up. What else is, I've seen people do Christmas type of Rice Krispie treats,
mm-hmm.
you know, with like green and red M&Ms to have the festive colors within those type of things.
Mm-hmm.
But to be honest, though, I mean, I think it's only been like a common thing, you know, like within the United States during Christmas time for like maybe the last 40 years or so. I'd say before the 1960s, celebrating mm-hmm. Christmas, I don't think a lot of people even did big hams and big turkeys and stuff like we do on Thanksgiving. I think it was more just about sweets, coffee, eggnog, and all that type of thing. So I think it's still similar, like when we're talking about Diwali in India, that it's like the sweets are more prevalent.
I see.
You know, just in terms of like the holy significance of it all. So I don't know. Yeah. There's not a lot of savory things, and it's all smaller things.
I see. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
That's my theory that it's.
I wonder if it's also because it's very communal, like, you know, everyone goes out and, you know, to celebrate or to, you know, to do the, you know, to celebrate this festival together. And so I wonder if that's sort of like markets are going to be selling these kinds of, you know, these are the just like the kinds of like foods that you can find that different, you know, like it's like very, maybe it's like you're sharing a lot. So you have like these little bite-sized foods to like share with people and stuff. And they're easy to eat or something. I mean, I'm just speculating, but I could see that being because it's like you're outside. It's, you know, you're celebrating, and so it's like you go to a, you know, like there's like markets that pop up, or maybe like you're cooking for your friends or something. It doesn't seem like a, like in the sense of like how we might have like a Christmas feast or something, and it's like an actual dinner with dishes.
Well, that's what I'm trying to say, because I don't think we used to do that. I mean, back in the day, I want to say like in the 50s and 60s, I feel like Christmas was enough stress on its own, you know, dealing with all the decorations and all the...
So was Charles Dickens lying then with the Christmas Carol and how they're getting a goose for Christmas dinner?
Well,
I think Christmas dinner has always been a thing.
You think Christmas dinner has always been a thing? See, yeah. I don't believe that. I actually believe it was just too much work, you know, adding all the other aspects to, you know, what it takes to put a Christmas together and all the... Then there was no online shopping. Mind you, you know, everybody had to sit in lines at Montgomery Ward, Sears.
Christmas dinner has always been one of the main events.
I always feel like it was, like I said, we had talked about this on a previous episode. Actually, I want to say it was last year when we were talking about Christmas in Brazil, for a matter, that I was telling you, I used to celebrate Christmas at midnight on Christmas Eve as a kid. So I was not eating a lot of food waking up at midnight. I was like, you know, I would... You know, my parents would wake me up all, you know, drowsy-headed and be like, here's some coffee, wake up, look what Santa did while you were sleeping. And I'm like, oh, cool, yay, and blah, blah. Then I would have my eggnog and I would just have some, you know, just snack on sweets and then open gifts.
I'm going to take you back to the Neolithic period, to the origins of Christmas.
Okay.
And all the different types of Christmas dinners that have been had.
All right. Well, so enlighten me.
In the Neolithic period, people gathered for midwinter feasts that included stews, roasted pork, crab apples, hazelnuts, and blackberries. In the Roman period, the Romans celebrated Saturnalia, a winter festival that took place between December 17th and 23rd. Oh, it doesn't say what they ate. In the medieval period, Christmas dinners included pies, minced meat dishes, roast meats, and fish. In the Tudor period, turkeys were introduced to England from North America, so then they became a popular addition to Christmas dinner. 16th and 17th centuries, goose was commonly served, and the wealthy ate peacock and swan. In the Victorian era, that's when they started making confections for like cakes and stuff, sweets. Charles Dickens... funny enough, popularized the idea of a Christmas dinner with a roast bird, trimmings, and pudding. So Charles Dickens had a big cultural impact.
Okay.
So Christmas dinner has been a thing, actually, according to this, longer than sweets have.
This all sounds incredibly aristocratic to me. I don't think peasants were able to afford to do this kind of stuff during the holidays.
I think getting together with your family and having a meal, though, has been a big focus of Christmas.
Sure. Bread and cookies and brownies and eggnog is all you need.
I don't think, if you're talking about peasants, I think they would have gone for more savory things, you know. I don't think they would have afforded the sweets.
I mean, I don't know. It really depends on what you have on your own farm.
You're really going to die on this hill, aren't you?
I am, because I think we transition because we're like, man, it's a cold time of year, and like we need another warm meal to get us through to the new year, so that it became more popularized, and, you know, so people weren't just being like... feeling. They want to feel a little more grateful coming into the new year, a little more hopeful coming into the new year, and all that other stuff. So I think it was something that got more commonly adopted later.
Okay. Well, we have to wrap up our show. So,
like a gift, like a present.
thank you, Tyson. Yeah, we're wrapping up our show like a present. Thank you all for listening. This has been Life Stamps, stories from here and there. Today we talked about Diwali just the festival, how it's celebrated in India, various traditions surrounding it, and foods and the like, and how it's celebrated in different cities. This is 90.7 FM KBOO Portland. Did I say that right? KBOO 90.7 FM Portland.
Here in Portland. Anyway,
you got it. Here in Portland. Yeah. I think you got it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Also, you can hear it on KBOO.FM.
You can hear it on KBOO.FM. We also have a Spotify podcast, Life Stamps, that you can search for if you missed today's episode. And yeah, that's all for today. Happy holidays, and however you choose to celebrate, with sweets or without, with a big dinner or without, traditional or not traditional, you know, whatever that means to you. Have a great holiday, and we'll see you next time.
May the light shine onto your world and mine. Listening to Life Stamps, stories from here and there on KBOO 90.7 FM Portland. Join us in 2 weeks for our next episode. Until next time,
happy traveling!
You know, on a really dark night, even in the North Carolina mountains, you might be able to pick up KBOO, community radio, coming to you from Portland, Oregon. This is SciCon coming to you from Charlotte, North Carolina, supporting community radio, radio that works for all of us.
Welcome to World Ocean Radio. I'm Peter Neal, director of the World Ocean Observatory. Time and again in history, we hear of natural treatments for breaks, wounds, and diseases. Our ancestors brewed herbal teas, treated wounds with moss and leaves, and otherwise practiced a healing system derived from natural materials. The tradition continues in the practice of homeopathic medicine in various forms in both East and West, and the global industry in organic supplements that offer an alternative practice to the synthetic and expensive methodology that characterizes the healthcare system in the United States and elsewhere. As medicine has become standardized and mechanized and arbitrated by the insurance, pharmaceutical, and efficiency-driven practices of our time, we have lost some of that historical wisdom and its healing effect. We speak often in these editions of World Ocean Radio of the innovative and effective inventions of organizations in Iceland, a small country with a big heart, big ideas, and a powerful natural environment that provides not only its energy and food requirements, but also a basis for adaptation and invention of natural products and processes to drive its 21st century economy and culture. As Iceland relies heavily on fishing in its mix of finance and labor applications, it must stay competitive against larger industrialized fishing nations by maximizing the value of its fish products using 100% of the fish. This seems obvious, but in the U.S., for example, our industry wastes more than half by discarding bycatch, harvesting only specialized high-cost species, and failing to capture the added economic opportunity of such limited application and interest. In a June article in Bloomberg Businessweek, Lois Parshley reports on development of a fish skin-based FDA-approved treatment for chronic wounds and inflammation, 100% of the fish indeed. The only hint of its origin is a scale-like grid that also provides a matrix for binding around which new healthy skin can grow. I had seen this product in Reykjavik, but it was not yet approved by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration until late last year. Called Omega-3 Wound, the product is produced by Kerecis Limited, a small company located in Isfjordur, a town of 3,000 inhabitants with a limited economy based on fishing and small-scale tourism that now has a new employer at work. According to Fertram Sigurd Jonsson, CEO of Kerecis, the product has taken 9 years to develop and test successfully, using the skin of codfish caught locally, cleaned, dried, sterilized, and packaged for treatment of chronic wounds, burns, oral cancer, internal cosmetic and reconstructive surgeries, and other applications for the reduction of inflammation and pain. The market implication is huge. According to Parshree's article, quote, some 6.5 million Americans suffer from chronic wounds, whether related to vascular disease, diabetes, or complications from normal procedures. The 5-year survival rate is 54%, and treatments cost more than $25 billion a year, unquote. Parshree continues, quote, the U.S. Department of Defense is on the lookout for better burn treatments because of the increase in service wounds from improvised explosive devices. In a study conducted by the U.S. Army Institute for Surgical Research, the fish skin bested the healing rates of cadaver skin, a common military treatment for burns. The Army has also funded several further studies showing that unlike rival products, fish skin can ward off bacteria and reduce bleeding, unquote. So what we have here is a turning of the circle of knowledge, the rediscovery and reapplication of the healing property of fish oil, harvested as a value added from a traditional food product, enabling new employment for fishing communities and innovative, more powerful treatments for the injuries of modern war and of many other conditions that can be better and faster healed by a natural process derived from the ocean. That is the true message here, that the ocean has such an enormous, known and unknown implication for human health. When we fail to use it well, or worse, when we despoil or exhaust it, we are depriving ourselves and our children from its healing properties in a simple bandage, a new medicine, or the purity of the food we eat, the water we drink, and the air we breathe. The sea connects all things. We will discuss these issues and more in future editions of World Ocean Radio.
This summer, we are revisiting some of our favorite World Ocean Radio episodes that highlight optimism in ocean news, science, and advocacy. World Ocean Radio is distributed by the